Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. A top U.S. diplomat says the dire humanitarian situation in South Sudan requires urgent attention.
You know, when you look at South Sudan, you have to really think hard before you pull U.S. aid, because President Kiir doesn't care if we pull U.S. aid. He doesn't care if his people suffer. And that's the concern we have, is we don't know that that will make a difference.
And the U.S. And the UN Secretary General's special representative to South Sudan says the government should work hard to restore peace in the country.
South Sudanese everywhere I go urge their leaders to silence the guns and give peace a chance. To achieve this, I urge the government of transitional unity and the warring parties to put the interests of the people of South Sudan first so that they can properly serve their people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the National Salvation Front says the decision by his commanders to fight in Kajukeji was a mistake. General Thomas Cirillo claims his forces in Kajukeji were attacked several times by SPLA-IO forces loyal to Riek Machar. He says he has ordered his troops not to attack IO forces in Kajukeji.
So the decision of IO forces on the ground or commanders or leadership to force people to follow them by force is not in place and it's not correct. And we'll continue to resist that. We want the people of South Sudan to decide any organization they want to ally to.
Yeah, IO leaders in Kampala have been saying that their leadership, the leadership of IO, is trying to reach you in a bid to dialogue and diffuse the tension, but they're not getting the right response. Could you tell us more about your engagement with IO?
That is not correct. In fact, we are the one looking for them. I have directed my team in Uganda, in Kampala, to meet their colleagues of IO and to dialogue and see the best way for us to end this kind of problem so that we join hands and we rescue the people of South Sudan together.
Someone in Juba listening to this interview would want to know what General Thomas Cirillo wants to do in Equatoria. You came to Kajukeji, and the first thing that happened was your commander, Kenyi, attacked IO. So people are wondering, what are you up to in?
The information you got, Brother John, is not correct. John did not attack anybody. Instead, John was attacked by his colleagues that they left in the IO. We are not talking about Equatoria. We are talking about the people of South Sudan. About South Sudan, we are for South Sudan, we are not for Equatoria. Equatoria is part of South Sudan. So president of the National Salvation Front forces in Equatoria doesn't mean that we are for Equatoria. We have forces in Bargazal, we have forces in Upper Nile. So we are for South Sudan, John.
How big is your force?
The force, of course, is big. We are thousands. We are thousands.
Thousands is quite vague. How many thousands? 10,000, 20,000?
Of course, John, you know that in a world you have classified information. The number of people in the war is one of the classified informations. So I can't tell you. But you are thousands everywhere in South Sudan.
And so what is the next move now that you are already inside South Sudan and your forces have started engaging other forces? What is the next move?
Of course, the next move is for us to defend the people of South Sudan and continue to work hard using all sort kind of ways and means to liberate the people of South Sudan.
And how long is that? How soon is that going to happen?
You can't tell in a war. You can't tell in a war, but you are determined to liberate our people.
I'm not a military person, so anytime. When you say you can't tell in the war, what do you mean?
I mean that you can tell when are you going to defeat the enemy, but the people of South Sudan need to be rescued as soon as possible.
What do you mean the people need to be rescued? What is happening to the people?
The people are being brutalized by the system that pretend to be ruling them, the system under Salva Kiir. The governance system, you know, South Sudan is in a war by itself, and this is a result of the failed government of Salva Kiir in the country. They started to tribalize the whole country, dividing our people, destroying the fabric of our society, and you know that the whole country is fighting itself now. So we want to rescue the people of South Sudan from the misery of war and killing themselves.
That's General Thomas Cirillo, leader of the National Salvation Front. He was speaking with me this past hour in our studios here in Washington. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley is visiting South Sudan to try to speak with President Salva Kiir about the importance of peace to South Sudanese. Ahead of her visit, the Norwegian Refugee Council asked the U.S. government to lead by example and not forgo its moral authority over in South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking yesterday at a meeting with the African Union officials in Addis Ababa, U.S. Ambassador Haley said, if you look at the South Sudan situation and access being denied to humanitarian things, to see a government that is ignoring its people, that leads to conflicts, and we are seeing that situation deteriorate. She also said it's not clear that withdrawing humanitarian aid to the country will change anything.
When you look at South Sudan, you have to really think hard before you pull U.S. aid, because President Kiir doesn't care if we pull U.S. aid. He doesn't care if his people suffer. And that's the concern we have, is we don't know that that will make a difference by pulling U.S. aid or not. That's a conversation we will have, and we will try and see exactly what will move President Kiir so that he does take the moral high ground.
Rihanna Zawara, the Norwegian Refugee Council, or NRC's country director for South Sudan, says Haley's visit to East Africa should focus on two key issues.
One is that U.S. commitment that it will maintain its funding, humanitarian funding for South Sudan, and appoint a special envoy for South Sudan, so it can be both that to keep or to work on the peace, bringing peace and stability to play a role, and then, of course, keeping the humanitarian funding for the country as it is, being the one of the largest humanitarian donor in the country.
The position of U.S. Special Envoy to South Sudan and Sudan has remained vacant since Donald Trump moved into the White House in January. Zawar says absence of a special envoy puts the U.S. government in a weaker position in dealing with the South Sudan crisis. She says she hopes Haley makes appointing a special envoy for South Sudan a top priority in the Trump administration after visiting South Sudan this week.
I think having somebody dedicated for South Sudan to work for the South Sudan peace negotiation will actually bring a very positive impact. And having a special envoy for South Sudan on behalf of U.S. will be in a better place to make efforts or to play its role in terms of peace negotiations.
In April, President Trump proposed slashing humanitarian aid funding by a third. Many aid agencies have criticized the proposal. Zawar is urging the U.S. to continue funding humanitarian programs in South Sudan.
The biggest challenge comes from the civilian part, that humanitarian response will be stopped. For example, the famine early this year, I think it was a great example of a joint effort with the support of donors, humanitarian agencies, and of course government. The joint efforts managed to push back the famine from the country. I think looking at if the U.S. government actually decides to pull back from its humanitarian funding to the country, I think the suffering will be increased.
Haley is the first senior Trump administration official to visit South Sudan. She is expected to meet with President Salva Kiir, visit Juba Teaching Hospital and one of the largest UN camps hosting thousands of IDPs in Juba. Haley is expected to arrive in Juba tomorrow. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
On this United Nations Day, the UN Secretary General's special representative in South Sudan is calling on the government in Juba to put the interests of the people first. David Scherer says the UN is committed to helping South Sudanese achieve peace and prosperity. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
The 72nd anniversary of the United Nations was celebrated at an event in the capital by UN staff, government officials, donors and community activists under the theme, The UN in South Sudan Building the Future Together. UN Day marks the anniversary of the entry into force the 1945 of the UN Charter. With the ratification of the founding document by the majority of its signatories, the United Nations officially came into being. Since 1948, October 24th has been celebrated as UN Day. At today's event in Juba, UN Special Representative David Shearer said what is happening in South Sudan is very relevant to the principles on which the UN was founded.
When the UN came into existence, there were only 51 member states. Today, there are 193, including South Sudan, the UN's most recent and youngest member. But while the UN as an organisation has changed, our principles remain the same: to promote peace and security, human rights and development. And these principles are at the very core of the UN's family contribution in South Sudan.
But Shira says the hopes that many South Sudanese held for a brighter future when the country joined the UN 6 years ago have been dashed by war, displacement and suffering.
And our job together is to restore that hope so that people can look forward to lives together.
Shearer says the government of South Sudan must work harder to restore peace across the country so that development projects can begin in earnest.
South Sudanese everywhere I go urge their leaders to silence the guns and give peace a chance. To achieve this, I urge the government of transitional unity and the warring parties to put the interests of the people of South Sudan first so that they can properly serve their people.
South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Ilialamuru echoed previous statements by cabinet officials saying his government is committed to working with the UN to achieve peace and prosperity.
We are encouraged and we promise to work coherently with the UN and its partners to achieve the intentions of this day's celebration theme.
Lamuru says the government has accepted the deployment of the Regional Protection Force in Juba mandated by the UN, something the Kiir administration had initially rejected. He also says the government will cooperate with the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, who visits South Sudan this week to try to convince the country's political leaders to end the fighting.
The president and his select team are anxiously awaiting to engage Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to UN, on perspective of President Trump's administration on peace in the Republic of South Sudan.
South Sudanese residents in Juba say they are grateful for the work the UN is doing in their country. Anthony Lubang, a resident of Nyakwen area of Juba, says the UN has contributed greatly to his country in times of crisis.
The war that broke out in South Sudan two times, and they've been so much helping South Sudanese. One, like setting up camps and helping in the refugees. They didn't end there. They've been providing food and other things. So I appreciate their work in South Sudan.
Victoria Martin, who resides in the Jebel neighborhood, says the United Nations also provides employment to hundreds of South Sudanese.
I just want to appreciate the UN for what they're doing in South Sudan. Let's talk of they're employing some South Sudanese who are working with them, and they're greatly improving the lives of those people working with them.
Ambassador Haley is expected to arrive in South Sudan tomorrow. She was in Ethiopia yesterday. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at efforts to eradicate polio. That story is coming up after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time your family celebrated an important event? Can you describe it?
I remember in 2015, that's the first time we got a degree in our family. So it was important to us, and it was a big event. We enjoyed it. Everything was kawa. We enjoyed.
In March, when we heard that my brother performed well in his PhD, the event was so marvelous, whereby he invited most of his friends.
We had a wedding of my cousin. It was a joyous celebration, and we really had fun.
Celebrating my parents' anniversary. It was so grateful and very nice. Lots of people came. And it wasn't just about the celebration, but it was a lesson to us, the young generation.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we're talking about polio eradication. Nearly 30 years ago, the polio virus paralyzed 1,000 children a day. So far this year, 11 children have been diagnosed with polio thanks to a global effort to wipe out this virus. The effort has dropped amazing results, but as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, those behind it say it's not yet time to celebrate.
There are only two places in the entire world where children have caught polio this year, Afghanistan and Pakistan. The worldwide effort to end this disease is no less than Herculean, according to Carol Pandek of Rotary International.
Hundreds of thousands of frontline healthcare workers who are out there, you know, every day immunizing children in urban areas, in remote areas, in all sorts of settings.
Rotary International was the first organization to promote the global effort to end polio. At one time, in some countries, health workers risked their lives to immunize the children. Pandek says that is no longer the case.
What we found to be very successful is to use people from the communities, employ them to be the ones that are approaching families for vaccination because these people are trusted within the community, they're known to the community, and that seems to have really helped to alleviate some of those issues around safety for vaccinators.
Dr. Flavia Bustreo with the World Health Organization says the challenge now is to get to zero cases and to maintain that level for at least 3 years, just to make sure the virus is no longer circulating.
We need to maintain a strong surveillance to make sure we detect every single case, and then the community react to every single case that appear. So the strength of that surveillance is a critical element for reaching the final end for polio.
Dr. David Nabarro at the UN says getting to the end is actually the hardest part of the campaign because governments and organizations have to keep up their commitment until there are no more cases.
We must remain vigilant and focused till we're absolutely certain that the last case has been found and that we have got everybody protected.
That's why the theme of this year's World Polio Day is We're Not Done Yet. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Authorities in Wau State have banned nightclubs in the town, saying they encourage nighttime robberies and crimes. The newly appointed governor of Wau State, Angelo Taban Biagio, says criminals take advantage of residents living in areas where nightclubs are allocated. But some youth in the area argue crime has actually decreased in areas where there are nightclubs. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Governor Taban says he has received credible information that nighttime parties held in residential areas encourage criminals to loot people's property. Speaking in Arabic at Holy Trinity Church at Jebel Khair neighborhood on Sunday, Taban said nightclubs also encourage what he calls strange behavior, which hurts the traditions of the people of Wau.
Our cultures, such as Balanda dance, like in funeral rites or any occasion that involves traditional dance, are encouraged to go on, and we should maintain them. But of recent, there is something among young people called DJ, which is going to destroy our cultures. We don't want this DJ anymore to be entertained in this town.
Taban also says Nightclubs encourage immoral behavior among young people and says authorities will recruit new police officers to increase law and order in the town.
We will be recruiting a special police unit. Its mandate will be observing public behavior. It will crack down on young people who wear pants and pull it down on their buttocks. People who organize DJs and people dance while naked. We should all stop this.
Some young people in Wau say nightclubs and discos provide much-needed entertainment and sense of normalcy in the town, despite last year's violence, which forced thousands of people to flee their homes and seek refuge at church and UN compounds in Wau. Youth say many families have slowly returned to their homes when they heard that city was alive at night and people could come out without fear. 19-year-old Angela Wuda from Haijebel neighborhood left the UN camp 2 months ago because he grew bored of living at the camp. Speaking in Arabic, Wuda says he opposes the ban because nightclubs help keep neighborhoods vibrant.
I don't think this is a good idea. Night DJs should be allowed to continue. We need to have some entertainment to make us forget all the bored life we are in today. Now many families have decided to leave the UNMIS camps and come to their homes because the night DJs indicate that there is no insecurity.
28-year-old Pamela Dahia says the weekend parties have encouraged her to return home. Speaking in Arabic, Dahia says since she came to Motamadia residential area 3 months ago, she argues criminal activities there have actually decreased.
The night parties have helped in reducing crime rate. And if that DJ is there, you will feel secure because you will know these are not criminals and you will know that the area is secure.
But Wau resident Badgorni Wanawila welcomes the governor's order. Speaking in Arabic, Wanawila says nightclubs hurt students' performance in schools.
When they go and spend the night in the DJ, the following morning their parents expect them to go to school. Their attendance in the school is very poor, and in such a way they cannot perform well at the end of the term.
Stephen Robo Musa, who manages the Community Empowerment for Progress organization in Wau, says the governor's order would be fine if there were other entertainment establishments. Speaking in Arabic, Musa says municipal authorities should create other activities for the young people.
So, they can be provided with sports or cultural programs that will engage them and make them busy. But by banning the DJs alone without giving alternative will not help them.
Some Wau residents say nighttime robberies have fallen since the government deployed national security operatives in residential areas in late April. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A Uber driver in Midwestern state of Minnesota mocked a South Sudanese model, Nyakim Gatwich's dark skin. She took to Instagram to describe her 3,000 followers. Her influence has grown since then as news and entertainment media outlets picked up her story of self-love. The Huffington Post called Gatwich the self-love queen, and the Vogue described her as a role model for young women and girls. Ayen Bior spoke to Gatwich about her experience.
It has not been easy, honestly. Like I feel like as a little girl from like middle school and you know in high school, I feel like as a South Sudanese, we experience a lot of like hate and negative comments toward our skin because I feel like it's because it's something they're not used to seeing or something they're seeing as negative. So when you've been South Sudanese to the United States, being as dark, we even darker than the actual, you know, the African American or black people that I hear, it's really hard. It was not fun for me. You know, middle school was really hard where I didn't make any friends because it's like, you know, in classroom, they would make silly comment and the teacher call on me like, hey, Nyakim, you want to answer this question? And it would just be like, where is she? We can't see her. Who are you talking to? You know, to a teacher. So it's just like all the comment that you get, you know, you're too black. We can't see you smile. You look like under the bed. All these negative comments as a little girl experienced this for the first time from other black people. I thought it was just too much, you know.
The very features that people made fun of you of when you were in middle school are the features where you have been getting a lot of praise in recent months in the modeling industry. What has that been like for you?
It was shocking. Like, when I came, before I came here, I wanted to be a model. This was, you know, how, like, back home, like, I've seen TV. I was like, when I come to America, I'm going to model because modeling is fun. I'm something I'm passionate about since I was little. But and then when I landed here and went through all that, you know, bullying in middle school, it was like, nah, you know, I'm not beautiful enough to be a model, you know, because, like, I was made fun of by all these little kids. So, but now, since, like, I went viral, and I was like, oh, my God, this dark skin is beautiful, and this, it has been, I was shocked at first. I'm like, wait, this many people, like, think I'm beautiful? Like, what? You know, but it just, it has been amazing feeling to know that, thank God, I did not bleach my skin. Thank God I did not change, you know, how I look for because I wasn't accepted.
Have you ever considered bleaching?
I have considered bleaching. You know, I did. I'm not going to lie. I have considered bleaching when I was like 15, 16, because the bullying got so worse. You know, it's from the boys, from the kids. It just got so worse where I went to my sister. And bleaching in Sudanese community is something that is very, it's big. It's big, like people, you know. So I went to my sister and I was like, I want to bleach. You know, I consider it, but she's like, you're going to regret it. I don't think you should. My sister gave me the bad advice. She said, if you bleach, it won't be your skin that you're bleaching. It'll be your mind. Like, you would think, look at yourself in the mirror and you think you're beautiful, but in the back of your mind, you still know you're that dark-skinned girl that's still, you know, insecure because of the bullying that she's getting from all these Americans. So it's like, she said, it's going to hurt you in the long run, you know? And then I'm glad I didn't do it.
That's South Sudanese model Nyakim Gatwich speaking to Ayen Bior from Minnesota. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Surayako by Sauti Sol. Listening to Sauti Sol with the song Surayako Muzuri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let us know what you think about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.